work I'm thinking of. Luoji led Shiqiang into the living room. He surveyed it, but did not seem much impressed by the luxury and elegance. Luoji poured him a drink in a crystal goblet, but Shiqiang turned it down with a wave of his hand. It's 30-year-old aged brandy. I can't drink right now. Tell me of this romantic work of yours. Luoji sipped his brandy and sat down next to him. Dasher, I'm asking you to do me a favor. In your old job, did you ever have to look across the entire country for a particular person, or even around the world?
Yes.
Were you good at it?
At finding people?
Of course. Great. Help me find a person. A woman in her early 20s. This is part of the plan.
Nationality? Name? Address?
None. The possibility that she even exists in the world is low. Shiqiang looked at him, and after a few seconds said,
You dreamed her?
Luoji nodded. Daydreams, too. Shiqiang nodded, too, then said something Luoji had not expected him to say.
Okay.
What?
Okay. So long as you know what she looks like.
She's, well, she's Asian, so let's say Chinese. As Luoji spoke, he took out a paper and pencil. Her face is like this, her nose like this, and her mouth, geez, I can't draw. And her eyes, damn it, how can I draw her eyes? Do you have one of those things, a piece of software that will let you pull up a face and then adjust the eyes and nose and so on according to the eyewitness's description to come up with an accurate depiction of the person the witness saw?
Sure. I've got one right here on my laptop.
Then get it out and let's draw. Shiqiang stretched out on the sofa and situated himself comfortably.
Not necessary. You don't need to draw her. Just keep talking. Put aside her appearance and first talk about what sort of person she is.
Something in Luoji's mind caught fire, and he stood up and began to pace restlessly in front of the fireplace.
She... how should I put it? She came into this world like a lily growing out of a rubbish heap. So pure and delicate, and nothing around her can contaminate her. But it can all harm her. Yes, everything around her can hurt her. Your first reaction when you see her is to protect her. No, to care for her. To let her know that you are willing to pay any price to shield her from the harm of a crude and savage reality. She's so... Ah, I've got a clumsy tongue. I can't say anything clearly.
It's always like that, Shiqiang said with a laugh. His laugh, which had seemed crude and silly the first time Luoji heard it, felt full of wisdom now, and it soothed him.
But you've been clear enough.
Okay. Well, I'll go on then. She... But what am I saying? No matter what I say, I can't express what she's like in my heart. He grew irritated, and seemed to want to tear out his heart to show to Shiqiang. Shiqiang calmed him with a wave.
Forget it. Just talk about what happens when the two of you are together. The more detailed, the better.
Luoji's eyes widened in amazement.
How did you know about the two of us?
Shiqiang laughed again. Then he looked around.
There wouldn't happen to be any cigars in this place, would there?
Yes, there are. Luoji grabbed an elegant wooden box from the mantel, took out a thick Davidoff, and used an even more elegant guillotine-style cigar cutter to slice off the end. Then he passed it to Shiqiang and lit it for him with a cedar strip specially designed for cigars. Shiqiang took a puff and nodded his head, pleased.
Go on.
Luoji overcame his earlier language barrier and grew garrulous.
He described how she had come alive for the first time in the library, how she appeared in his classroom during lecture, how the two of them had met in front of the imaginary fireplace in his dormitory, the beauty of the firelight shining onto her face through the bottle of wine, like the eyes of twilight. He recalled with pleasure their road trip, describing every last detail. The fields after the snow, the town and village under the blue sky, the mountains like old villagers basking in the sun, and the evening and bonfire at the foot of the mountain. After he finished, Shi Qiang stubbed out his cigar.
"Well, that's about enough. I'll guess a few things about the girl, and you see if I'm right."
"Great."
"Education. She's got at least a bachelor's, but less than a doctorate."
Luoji nodded. "Yes, yes. She's knowledgeable, but not to the point where it calcifies her. It only makes her more sensitive to life and to the world."
"She was probably born into a highly educated family and lived a life that wasn't too rich, but more affluent than most families. Growing up, she enjoyed her parents' love, but she had little contact with the community, particularly the lower rungs of society."
"Right. Absolutely right. She never told me about her family circumstances, or actually anything about herself, but I think that ought to be the case.
Now, if any of the following speculations are wrong, let me know. She likes to wear, how would you put it, simple, elegant clothing, a little plainer than other women her age."
Luoji nodded dumbly, over and over.
"But there's always something white, like a shirt or a collar, that contrasts sharply with the dark colors of the rest of the outfit."
"Da, sure. You're..."
Luoji said, admiration in his eyes, as he watched Shi Qiang speak. Brushing him aside, Shi Qiang went on.
"Finally, she's not tall, 160 centimeters or so, and her body is, well, I guess you could say slender, as if a gust of wind could blow her away, so she doesn't seem so short. I can come up with more, of course. Not far off, is it?"
Luoji was ready to fall on his knees before Shi Qiang.
"Da Shi, I throw myself on the ground before you. You're the reincarnation of Sherlock Holmes."
Shi Qiang stood up. "Now I'll sketch her on the computer."
That night, he brought the computer to Luoji. When the woman's portrait appeared on screen, Luoji stared, not moving a muscle, like he had been struck by a curse. Shi Qiang had evidently expected this, and retrieved another cigar from the mantel, clipped it with the guillotine, lit it, and began to smoke. When he had taken a few puffs, he came back to find Luoji still staring at the screen.
"Tell me what's off and I'll adjust it for you."
With difficulty, Luoji tore his gaze from the screen, stood up, and walked to the window, where he watched the moonlight shining on the distant snow peak. He murmured, dreamlike, "Nothing."
"I thought so,"
Shi Qiang said, and closed the computer. Still gazing into the distance, Luoji uttered a phrase that others had used to evaluate Shi Qiang.
"Da Shi, you're a devil."
Shi Qiang sat down on the sofa, exhausted.
"There's nothing supernatural about it. We're both men."
Luoji turned to him.
"But every man's dream lover is quite different."
"Dream lovers are basically the same for men of a certain type."
"Still, getting it so close should be impossible."
"Remember, you told me a lot of stuff."
Luoji walked over to the computer and opened it up again.
"Send me a copy."
Then, as Shi Qiang worked on copying the image, he asked,
"Can you find her?"
"All I can say now is that it's quite likely. But I can't rule out not finding her."
"What?"
Luoji's hands stopped their movements, and he turned to look at Shi Qiang in astonishment.
"With this sort of thing, how can you guarantee 100% success?"
No, that's not what I mean. The total opposite, in fact. I thought you would say that it's practically impossible, but you wouldn't rule out a random 1/10,000th of a percent chance of finding her. And if you had said that, I'd have been satisfied. He turned back to the picture on the screen and murmured again. Can such a person really exist in the world? Xie Qiang smiled scornfully.
Dr. Luo, how many people have you seen?
Not as many as you, of course, but I know that there's no perfect person in the world, much less a perfect woman.
Like you said earlier, I'm often able to find a particular individual out of tens of thousands, and I can tell you from the experience of most of my life that there are all kinds of people out there. All kinds, my boy. Perfect people, perfect women. You just haven't met them.
That's the first time I've heard anyone say that.
It's because someone who's perfect in your mind isn't necessarily perfect in the minds of others. This girl of your dreams, to me, she's got obvious, well, imperfections. So there's a good chance of finding her.
But directors can search for an ideal actor out of tens of thousands of people and not find them in the end.
Those directors can't match our professional search capabilities. We're not just looking at tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands, or millions of people. The tools and techniques we use are more sophisticated than any director's. The computers at the Police Analysis Center, say, can find a match out of upwards of 100 million faces in just half a day. The only catch is that this is beyond the scope of my duties, so I'll need to report to the higher authorities first. If they approve and assign the task to me, then of course I'll do my best.
Tell them that it's an important part of the Wallfacer project and must be taken seriously.
Xie Qiang chuckled opaquely and then took his leave.
What? The PDC needs to find him?
Kent groped for the Chinese term.
A dream lover? The guy's been indulged too much. I'm sorry. I can't pass along your request.
Then you are in violation of the Wallfacer Project principle. No matter how incomprehensible a Wallfacer's order is, it must be reported and executed. Any veto belongs to the PDC.
But we can't use society's resources to allow a person like him to live the life of an emperor. Mr. Xu, we haven't been working together long, but I really respect you. You're an experienced and insightful man. So tell me the truth. Do you really think Luo Ji is carrying out the Wallfacer project?
Xie Qiang shook his head.
I don't know.
He raised a hand to stop Kent from arguing.
However, sir, that's just my ignorance, not the opinion of our superiors. This is the biggest difference between you and me. I'm just someone who faithfully carries out orders. You're someone who always has to ask why.
Is that wrong?
It's not about right or wrong. If everyone had to be clear about why before they executed an order, then the world would have plunged into chaos long ago. Mr. Kent, you do outrank me, but when you get down to it, we're both people who carry out orders. We ought to understand that some things aren't for people like us to think over. It's enough to do our duty. If you can't do that, then I'm afraid you'll have a rough time.
I'm already having a rough time. We just wasted gobs of money buying that sunken wine. I just think... Look, does he look like a Wallfacer at all?
What should a Wallfacer look like?
Kent was speechless for a moment.
Even if there were a template for a Wallfacer, Luo Ji is not entirely inconsistent with it.
What?
Asked Kent, a little taken aback.
You're not saying that you see a certain amount of quality in him.
That I am.
Well, damn it,
What do you see?
Xue Qiang clapped a hand to Kent's shoulder.
You, for example. If the wall-facer mantle descended upon you, you would be an opportunistic hedonist just like him.
I'd have broken down long before now.
That's right. But Luoji's carefree. Nothing bothers him. Kent, old fellow, do you think what he's doing is easy? Open-mindedness is what this is, and anyone who wants to do great things needs to be open-minded. Someone like you won't accomplish great things.
But he's so... if he's just carefree like that, how does it relate to the Wallfacer Project?
I've been explaining it all this time, and you still don't get it? I said that I don't know. How do you know that what the guy's doing right now isn't part of the plan? Once again, this isn't something for you or I to judge. Taking a step back, even if we're correct in what we think...
Xue Qiang drew close to Kent and lowered his voice.
Some things require time.
Kent stared at Xue Qiang for a long moment, and at last shook his head, unsure whether or not he understood that last sentence.
Fine. I'll make the report. But can you let me see that dream lover of his first?
When he saw the woman on the screen, Kent's old face grew gentle for an instant. He rubbed his jaw and said,
Oh, my God. I don't believe for a moment that anyone like that exists, but I hope you find her soon.
Colonel, do you find it a little abrupt for me to inspect the political and ideological work of your military in my capacity? Tyler said when he met Zhang Beihai.
No, Mr. Tyler. There's precedent for it.
Rumsfeld once visited the Central Military Commission's party school when I was studying there. Zhang Beihai lacked the curiosity, caution, and distance that Tyler had observed in the other officers. He appeared sincere, and that made the conversation easier.
You've got good English. You must be from the Navy.
That's right. The U.S. Space Force drew an even larger proportion from the Navy than we did.
That venerable old branch of the services would never have imagined that its warships would be sailing into space. I'll be frank. When General Chang Wei-se introduced you as the finest political cadre in the Space Force, I thought you would be Army, because the Army is the soul of your military.
Zhang Beihai clearly did not agree, but he laughed graciously. The same soul is found throughout the different branches of the military. In every country's nascent space force, the military culture bears the imprint of its various branches.
I'm quite interested in your political and ideological work. I was hoping I could do some in-depth investigation.
Not a problem at all. My superiors have instructed me to hold nothing back within the scope of my work.
Thank you. Tyler hesitated before going on. My purpose in this trip is to obtain an answer. I'd like to ask you first.
Of course. Go ahead.
Colonel, do you believe that we can restore the spirit of armies of the past?
What do you mean by past?
A wide range of time, from perhaps ancient Greece through the Second World War. What's key is the spiritual commonalities I mentioned. Duty and honor above all, and, in time of need, to unhesitatingly lay down one's life. You may have noticed that after the Second World War, this spirit vanished from the military in democratic and authoritarian countries alike.
The army is drawn from society, so it would mean that the past spirit you speak of would need to be restored throughout society.
Our views agree on this point.
But, Mr. Tyler, that is impossible.
Why? We have 400 years. In the past, human society used exactly that amount of time
to evolve from the era of collective heroism to one of individualism. So why can't we use the same amount of time to evolve back?
Zhang Beihai considered this for a moment, then said, "This is a profound question, but I think that society has grown up and can never return to its childhood. In the 400 years that led to the formation of modern society, we see no cultural or mental preparation for this sort of crisis."
"Then from what do you draw your confidence? As far as I'm aware, you are a committed triumphalist. How will a space fleet brimming with defeatism face a powerful enemy?"
"Didn't you just say we have 400 years? If we can't go backward, then we must move resolutely forward."
Zhang Beihai's answer was opaque. Tyler obtained nothing else from the ensuing conversation, but a feeling that the man's thoughts went deeper than a brief visit could reveal. Tyler passed a sentry as he left the Space Force headquarters. When their eyes met, the sentry greeted him with a shy smile. It was something he hadn't seen in other countries' militaries, whose sentries stared intently straight ahead. Looking at the young man's face, Tyler once again repeated that line to himself. "Mom, I'm going to be a firefly." It began to rain that evening for the first time since Luoji had arrived at the estate, and the living room was quite cold. He sat beside the unlit fireplace and listened to the rain outside, feeling that the house was located on a lonely island in the middle of a dark ocean. He wrapped himself in the boundless solitude. With Shiqiang gone, he had been restlessly waiting, and this lonely wait was itself a kind of happiness. Then he heard a car pull up to the porch and caught snatches of conversation. The soft, gentle voice of a woman saying thank you and goodbye jolted him like an electric shock. 2 years ago, he had heard the same sound day and night in his dreams. The ethereal sound, a wisp of gossamer floating through the blue sky, brought a fleeting sunshine to the gloomy evening. Then there was a light knock at the door. He sat stiffly in place, and only after a long while did he finally open his mouth and say, "Come in." The door opened. A slender figure floated in on a breath of rain. The sole light in the living room was a floor lamp with an old-fashioned lampshade that cast a circle of illumination beside the fireplace, but lit the rest of the room only dimly. Luoji couldn't make out her face, but noticed that she wore white trousers and a dark jacket that stood in stark contrast to her white collar and made him think of lilies.
"Hello, Mr. Luo," she said.
"Hello," he said, standing up. "Is it cold outside?"
"Not in the car."
Although he couldn't see her clearly, he knew she was smiling.
"But here..."
She looked around her.
"Here it's a little cold. I'm Zhuang Yan, Mr. Luo."
"Hello, Zhuang Yan. Let's light the fireplace." And so Luoji knelt down and put some of the neatly stacked fruit wood into the fireplace. He said, "Have you ever seen one before? Here, come have a seat." She came over and sat on the sofa, still in the shadows.
"Oh, only in the movies."
Luoji struck a match and lit the fire starter under the woodpile. The flame stretched like it was alive, and the woman gradually took shape in its soft golden glow. Luoji gripped tightly to the match with two fingers as it burnt down. He needed the pain to tell him this wasn't a dream. It was like he had ignited the sun, which now shone on a dream world turned reality. Outside, the sun could remain forever hidden by clouds and night, so long as his world had her and the firelight in it.
Dasher, you really are a devil. Where did you find her? How the hell were you able to find her? Luoji looked away, back into the fire, and tears came unbidden to his eyes. This made him a little scared to look at her, until he realized there was no reason to hide. She would probably think it was the smoke that made him cry. He rubbed his tears away with a hand.
It's really warm and nice,
she said with a smile as she watched the flames. Her words and her smile made Luoji's heart tremble.
Why is it like this?
She looked up and glanced around the dim living room a second time. It's not the same as you imagined?
It's not the same.
It's not. He thought about her name. It's not dignified enough for you? She smiled at him.
My name is the Yan that means color, not dignity.
Oh, I see. Perhaps you think there ought to be lots of maps and a large screen and clusters of uniformed generals, and I'd be here pointing at things with a stick.
That's it exactly, Mr. Luo.
Delighted, her smile blossomed like a rose in bloom. Luoji stood up. You must be tired from the journey. Have some tea. He hesitated. Or would you care for some wine? It'll ward off the cold. She nodded.
Okay.
She accepted the goblet with a quiet thank you and took a small sip. Looking at her innocently holding the wine glass stirred the most delicate parts of his mind. She drank when invited. She trusted the world and had no wariness about it at all. Yes, everything in the world was lying in wait to hurt her, except here. She needed to be cared for here. This was her castle. He sat down and looked at her, and then said, as calmly as he could, What did they tell you before you came?
That I'd be coming to work, of course.
She flashed him that innocent smile that dashed his heart to pieces.
Mr. Luo, what will I be working on?
What did you study?
Traditional painting, at the Central Academy of Fine Arts.
Ah. Have you graduated?
Yes, I just graduated, and have been looking for work while I prepare for grad school.
Luoji considered this for a while, but he couldn't come up with anything for her to do. Well, as for work, we'll talk about that tomorrow. You must be tired. First, you must sleep well. Do you like it here?
I don't know. There was a lot of fog when I came from the airport, and then it got dark. So I couldn't see anything. Mr. Luo, where is this?
I don't know either. She nodded and chuckled to herself, clearly not believing him. I really don't know where we are. The land looks like Scandinavia. I could call and ask right now. He reached for the phone next to the sofa.
No, don't, Mr. Luo. It's nice not knowing.
Why?
Once you know, the world turns narrow.
My God, he exclaimed to himself. All of a sudden, she exclaimed,
Mr. Luo, look at how lovely the wine is in the firelight.
The wine, soaked in the light of the fire, shone with a glistening crimson found only in dreams. What do you think it looks like? He asked nervously.
Well, I think it looks like eyes.
The eyes of twilight, no?
The eyes of twilight? That's a marvelous way to put it, Mr. Luo.
Dawn or twilight? You prefer twilight, do you?
That's right. How did you know? I love painting the twilight.
Her eyes shone crystalline in the firelight, as if asking, "What's wrong with that?" The next morning, after the rain had cleared, Luoji felt as if God had washed out this Garden of Eden to prepare for Zhuang Yan's arrival. When she saw its true appearance for the first time, what Luoji heard was not the squeals and fussing and exclamations that young women like her usually made. No. In the face of such a magnificent vista, she fell into an awed and breathless state and was unable to speak even one word of praise. He could tell that she was far more sensitive to natural beauty than other women. "So you really like to paint?" he asked. She stared speechless at the distant snow peak, and it was some time before she recovered her senses.
"Oh, yes. But if I'd grown up here, I probably wouldn't."
"Why's that?"
"I've imagined lots of wonderful places, and when I paint them, it's like I've been there. But this place has everything from my dreams and imagination. So what would a painting do?"
"That's true. When the beauty in your imagination becomes reality, it's really..." He trailed off and glanced at Zhuang Yan against the sunrise, the angel who had stepped out of his dream. The happiness in his heart rippled like the waves on the lake sparkling in the light. The UN and the PDC never imagined that this would be a consequence of the Wallfacer project. If he died now, he wouldn't care.
"Mr. Luo, if it rained so much yesterday, why hasn't the snow on that mountain been washed away?" she asked.
"The rain fell below the snow line. The mountain has snow year-round. The climate here is very different from back in China."
"Have you been to the mountain?"
"No. I haven't been here very long." He noticed that the girl's eyes never left the mountain. "Do you like snowcaps?" She nodded. "Then let's go."
"Really? When?"
she exclaimed in excitement. "We can set off now. There's a simple roadway that runs to the foot of the mountain, and if we go now, we can be back by evening."
"What about work?"
Zhuang Yan tore her eyes from the mountain and looked at Luoji. "Work can be set aside for now. You just arrived," he said perfunctorily.
"Well?"
She tilted her head, giving his heart a jolt. The naive expression was one he had seen on her countless times before.
"Mr. Luo, I've got to know what it is I'm doing."
He looked into the distance and thought for a few seconds, then said with finality, "I'll tell you when we reach the mountain."
"Great. Then we should be off, shouldn't we?"
"Right. It's easier if we take the boat to the other side of the lake and then drive from there." They walked to the end of the pier. Luoji noted that the wind was favorable, so they could take the sailboat. The direction would change at night, so they would be able to catch it again coming back. He took her by the hand to help her into the boat. It was the first time he had touched her, and her hands were exactly like the ones he had first clasped on that winter night in his imagination, so soft and cool. She was pleasantly surprised when he raised the white spinnaker. When the boat left the pier, she plunged a hand into the water. "The lake water is very cold," he said.
"But it's so clean and clear."
"Like your eyes," he said to himself. "Why do you like snowcaps?"
"I like traditional painting."
"What's that got to do with snowcaps?"
"Mr. Luo, are you aware of the difference between traditional painting and oil painting? Oil paintings are brimming with rich colors. A master once said that in oil painting, white is as precious as gold. But it's different with traditional painting. There's lots and lots of blank space, and blank space forms the painting's eyes. The scenery is just the border for that blank space. Look at that snowy peak. Doesn't it look like the blank space in a traditional painting?
This was the most she had ever said to him. She lectured the wall-facer, pouring out words and turning him into an ignorant schoolboy, without any sense of being out of line. You're like the blank space in a traditional painting. Pure, but to a mature appreciation, infinitely appealing, he thought as he looked at her. The boat docked at a pier on the opposite shore, where an open-top jeep was parked next to the trees. The driver who had parked it there was gone.
Is this a military car? I saw troops around when I arrived and had to go past 3 sentry points, she said as they got into the car.
That doesn't matter. They won't bother us, he said, starting the engine. The road passing through the forest was narrow and rough, but the car drove smoothly on it. In the forest, where the morning mist had not yet lifted, the sun penetrated the tall pines with shafts of light, and even through the engine sound, they could hear the calls of birds in the trees. A sweet breeze whipped up Zhuang Yan's hair and tossed it about on Luoji's face, and the itching made him think of the winter road trip 2 years ago. Everything about their surroundings was completely remote from Mount Taihong and the snowy northern China plains. But his dreams from that trip were so seamlessly connected to today's reality that he found it hard to believe that it was actually happening to him. He turned to look at Zhuang Yan and found her looking back at him. She had been for a long time, it seemed. The look in her eyes was one of slight curiosity mixed with goodwill and innocence. Sunbeams flickered over her face and body. When she saw Luoji looking at her, she did not turn away.
Mr. Luo, do you really have the ability to defeat the aliens? She asked.
He was completely overcome by her childlike nature. The question was one that no one but her would ever ask a wall-facer, and they had known each other so briefly. Zhuang Yan, the core meaning of the wall-facer project is to encapsulate humanity's real strategy in the mind of one person, the only place in the world that's safe from Sofon spying. They had to choose a few people, but that doesn't mean those people are supermen. Superman doesn't exist.
But why were you chosen?
That question was even more abrupt and outrageous than the previous one, but it sounded natural coming from Zhuang Yan's lips, because in her transparent heart, every sunbeam was transmitted and refracted with crystalline clarity. Luoji slowed the car to a stop. She looked at him in surprise as he stared straight ahead at the patches of sun on the roadway. Wall-facers are the most untrustworthy people in history. The world's greatest liars.
That's your duty.
He nodded. But, Zhuang Yan, I'm going to tell you the truth. Please believe me. She nodded.
Mr. Luo, please continue. I believe you.
He was silent for a long while, increasing the weight of the words he then uttered. I don't know why I was chosen. He turned to her. I'm just an ordinary man. She nodded again.
It must be very hard.
Those words and Zhuang Yan's look of innocence again brought tears to his eyes. It was the first time he had received such an acknowledgement since becoming a wall-facer. The girl's eyes were his paradise, and in that clear gaze, he saw no trace of the expression that everyone else directed at the wall-facers. Her smile was paradise for him, too. It wasn't the wall-facer smile, but a pure, innocent smile, like a sun-drenched dewdrop falling softly into the driest part of his soul. It'll be hard, but I'd like to make it easier. That's all. Here endeth the truth. We now return to the Wallfacer state, he said, and he restarted the engine. They drove on in silence, until the trees grew sparse, and the deep blue sky emerged overhead.
Mr. Luo, look at that eagle!
Zhuang Yan shouted. And that over there looks like a deer, he pointed, fast enough to distract her attention, because he knew that the object in the sky wasn't an eagle, but a circling sentry drone. This reminded him of Shiqiang. He took out his phone and dialed. Shiqiang answered.
Hey, Brother Luo. So now you remember me, eh? First, tell me, how's Yan Yan doing?
Fine. Excellent. Wonderful. Thank you.
That's good. So it turns out I've completed my final mission.
Final mission? Where are you?
Back home. I'm getting ready for hibernation.
What?
I've got leukemia. I'm going to the future to cure it.
Luoji slammed his foot down on the brakes and stopped short. Zhuang Yan yelped. He looked at her in concern, but seeing that nothing was wrong, he resumed talking to Shiqiang.
When did this happen?
I got irradiated on a previous mission, and then got ill last year.
My God! I didn't delay you, did I?
With this sort of thing, delay isn't relevant. Who knows what medicine will be like in the future?
I'm truly sorry, Da Shi.
Oh, it doesn't matter. It's all part of the job. I didn't bother you about it, because I figured we would be able to meet again sometime. But I'd like to tell you something in case we can't.
Please.
After a lengthy silence, Shiqiang said,
Three things are unfilial, and having no issue is the greatest. Brother Luo, the lineage of the Shi family 400 years from now is in your hands.
The call disconnected. Luoji looked up at the sky, where the drone had disappeared. The empty blue wash of the sky was his heart.
You were talking to Uncle Shi?
Zhuang Yan asked.
Yes. Did you meet him? I met him. He's a nice man. The day I left, he accidentally broke the skin on his hand, and it wouldn't stop bleeding. It was pretty scary.
Oh. Did he say anything to you?
He said you were doing the most important thing in the world, and he asked me to help you.
Now the forest had entirely disappeared, leaving only grassland between them and the mountain. In silver and green, the composition of the world had turned simple and pure, and, to Luoji's mind, more and more like the girl sitting beside him. He noticed a hint of melancholy in her eyes, and he became aware that she was sighing softly.
Yan Yan, what's wrong? He asked.
It was the first time he had called her that, but he thought, if Da Shi can call her that, why can't I?
It's such a beautiful world. But when you think about how someday there may be no one here to see it, it's quite sad.
Won't the aliens be here?
I don't think they appreciate beauty.
Why?
My dad said that people who are sensitive to beauty are good by nature, and if they're not good, then they can't appreciate beauty.
Yan Yan, their approach to humans is a rational choice. It's the responsible thing to do for the survival of their species, and has nothing to do with good or evil.
That's the first I've heard of it. Mr. Luo, you're going to see them, aren't you?
Perhaps.
If they're really like you say, and you defeat them in the Doomsday Battle, then, well, could you...
She tilted her head to look at him, and hesitated. He was about to say that the possibility of that was practically nil, but he controlled himself and said,
"Could I what? Why do you have to drive them out into space to die? Give them a plot of land and let them coexist with us. Wouldn't that be wonderful?"
Luoji dealt silently with his emotions for a moment, then pointed up to the sky and said,
"Yan Yan, I'm not the only one who heard what you just said."
Zhuang Yan looked up nervously.
"Oh, right. There must be tons of Sofans around us."
"It might have been the Trisolar High Consul himself who heard you."
"And you're all laughing at me, aren't you?"
"No. Yan Yan, do you know what I'm thinking right now?"
He had a strong impulse to take hold of her slender left hand, which was lying next to the steering wheel, but he controlled himself.
"I'm thinking that the person who might actually have a chance of saving the world is you."
"Me?"
She burst out laughing.
"You. Except that you're not enough. Or rather, there aren't enough people like you. If a third of humanity was like you, then Trisolaris might negotiate with us about the possibility of coexisting on the world. But now..."
He let out a long sigh. Zhuang Yan flashed a helpless smile.
"Mr. Luo, it hasn't been easy for me. Going out into the world after graduation, I was like a fish swimming into the sea, where the water was muddy and I couldn't see anything at all. I wanted to swim to clearer waters, but all that swimming got tiring."
"I wish I could help you swim to those waters," he said to himself.
The road began to climb the mountain, and as the altitude increased, the vegetation grew sparse, exposing the naked black rock. For one stretch of road, they seemed to be driving on the surface of the moon. But soon they crossed the snow line and were surrounded by white, and a crisp chill filled the air. He grabbed down jackets from the travel bag in the back seat, and they put them on and continued ahead. Before long, they reached a roadblock, a conspicuous sign in the middle of the road that warned, "Danger, avalanche season. Road ahead closed." So they got out of the car and walked to the snow at the roadside. The sun had started its descent, casting shadows around them on the snowy slope. The pure snow was pale blue in color, almost weakly fluorescent. The jagged peaks in the distance were still lit and shone silver in all directions, a light that seemed to issue from the snow itself, as if it was this mountain and not the sun that had been illuminating the world all along.
"Okay, now the painting's entirely blank," he said, sweeping his hands about him.
Zhang Yan drank in the white world around her.
"Mr. Luo, I actually did do a painting like this once. From a distance, it was a white sheet of paper, almost entirely blank. But closer in, you would see fine reeds in the lower left corner, and in the upper right, the traces of a disappearing bird. In the blank center, two infinitesimally tiny people. It's the painting I'm proudest of."
"I can imagine it. It must be magnificent. So, Zhuang Yan, now that we're in this blank world, are you interested in learning about your job?"
She nodded, but looked anxious. "You know about the Wallfacer project, and you know that its success relies on its incomprehensibility. At its highest level, no one on Earth or Trisolaris, apart from the Wallfacer himself, understands it. So, Zhuang Yan, no matter how inexplicable you find your work, it definitely has meaning. Don't try to understand it. Just do it as best you can."
She nodded nervously.
"Yes, I understand.
Then she laughed and shook her head.
I mean, I get it.
Looking at her amid the snow, the whiteness lost all dimension, and the world faded around her, leaving her its only presence. 2 years before, when the literary image he had created had come to life in his imagination, he had tasted love. Now, in the blank space of this grand natural painting, he understood love's ultimate mystery. Zhuang Yan, your work is to make yourself happy. Her eyes widened. You must become the happiest woman on earth. This is part of the Wallfacer plan. The light of the peak that illuminated their world was reflected in her eyes, and complex feelings drifted across the purity of her gaze. The snowy peak absorbed all sound from the outside world, and he waited patiently in the silence, until finally she said, in a voice that seemed to come from a great distance,
"Then, what should I do?"
Luoji grew animated.
"Whatever you want to. Tomorrow, or when we go back tonight, you can go wherever you want and do whatever you wish, and live life as you please. As a Wallfacer, I can help you realize all of it."
"But I..." She looked at him helplessly. "Mr. Luo, I don't need anything."
"That's not possible. Everyone needs something. Aren't young people always chasing after something?"
"Have I ever chased after anything?"
She slowly shook her head.
"No, I don't think so."
"Ah, yes. A carefree young woman like you might not need to. But you've got to have a dream, at least. You like painting, so have you ever thought of having an individual exhibition at the world's largest gallery or art museum?"
She laughed, as if Luoji had turned into a foolish child.
"Mr. Luo, I paint for myself. I've never thought about that stuff."
"Well then, you must have dreamed of love," he said without hesitation. "You've got the means now, so why not go find it?"
The sunset was draining its light from the snowy peak. Zhuang Yan's eyes darkened, and her expression softened. She said gently,
"Mr. Luo, that's not something you can go in search of."
"True."
He calmed himself down and nodded.
"Then, how about this? Don't think long term. Just think about tomorrow. Tomorrow, you know? Where do you want to go tomorrow? What do you want to do? What will make you happy tomorrow? You're able to come up with something, surely."
She thought earnestly for a while, and finally said, hesitantly,
"If I tell you, can you really make it happen?"
"Of course. Tell me."
"Then, Mr. Luo, can you take me to the Louvre?"
When Tyler removed the blindfold, his eyes weren't adjusted to the light, and he had to squint. Despite the bright lights affixed to the rock walls of this mountain cave, it was dark here, quite dark, in fact, because the light was absorbed by the walls. He smelled antiseptic and noticed the cave was set up like a field hospital, with lots of open aluminum cases containing neatly packed drugs, as well as oxygen tanks, small UV disinfectant cabinets, mobile shadowless operating lamps, and several portable medical devices that looked like X-ray machines and defibrillators. It looked like it had just been unpacked and could be reboxed at any time. Tyler saw two assault rifles hanging on a rock wall, but their similarity in color to the rock behind made them easy to miss. A stony-faced man and woman walked past him.
They weren't in white lab coats, but they were definitely a doctor and a nurse. The bed, near the cave entrance, was a sea of white. The curtains behind it, the old man under the bedsheets, the old man's long beard, the scarf around his head, and even his face, all white. The light in that area was more like candlelight, obscuring some of the whiteness and casting a weak golden sheen across the remainder, turning the place into a classical oil painting of a saint. Tyler spat inwardly.
Damn it to hell. How did it come to this?
As he walked over to the bed, he tried to overcome the pain in his hip and inner thigh by adopting a stately, steady pace. He stopped at the bedside, before the man that he and his government had dreamed of finding for so many years. He could hardly believe he was real. He looked at the old man's pale face, and it was like the media always said. This was the kindliest face in the world. Man truly was a peculiar animal.
I'm honored to meet you, Tyler said with a slight bow.
As am I,
the old man said politely. He didn't move, but while his voice was reed thin, it could render power inert but never snap, like spider silk. The old man gestured to the end of the bed, and Tyler sat down gingerly, not knowing whether or not it was intended as kindness. There was no chair, after all. The old man said,
You must be tired. Was it your first time on a mule?
Ah, no. I rode one when I visited the Grand Canyon, although his legs hadn't hurt so much back then. Are you doing well? The old man slowly shook his head.
Surely you can see that I don't have long to live.
A playful light suddenly entered his deep eyes.
You're about the least likely person to want me to die of illness. I am truly sorry.
The irony in this last sentence pricked Tyler, but it was the truth. One of his greatest fears had once been that the man would die of illness or old age. The Secretary of Defense had prayed on many an occasion that an American cruise missile or Special Forces bullet would drop on the man's head before he died of natural causes, even if it happened just a minute before death. Natural death would be the man's greatest triumph and mark the failure of the War on Terror. Even now, the man was edging close to glory. There had been opportunities, of course. Once, a predator drone had snapped his picture in the courtyard of a mosque in the mountains of northern Afghanistan. Simply crashing the drone into him would have made history, not to mention the fact that it had been carrying Hellfire missiles that day. But the young officer on duty lacked the courage to make a unilateral decision once he made the positive ID. Instead, he had reported it up the command chain, and when they checked again, the target was gone. Tyler, roused from his bed, had erupted in anger and shattered a precious piece of Chinese porcelain he had at home. Tyler wanted to avoid the awkward subject, so he brought out his briefcase and set it on the bed.
I have a small gift for you, he said, opening the case.
He took out a set of hardcover books.
This is the latest Arabic version.
With effort, the old man reached out a hand as thin as kindling and plucked out the bottommost volume.
Ah, I've only read the first trilogy. I had someone buy the others, but I never had the time to read them, and then I lost them. Excellent. Thank you. I like them very much.
There's a legend that says you named your organization after these novels.
The old man set the book gently to one side and smiled.
Let it stay a legend. You have your wealth and technology. Legends are all we have.
Tyler picked up the book the old man had set down and faced him like a pastor holding a Bible.
I've come to make you into Selden.
The same playful light returned to the old man's eyes.
Oh? What do I need to do?
Let your organization be preserved.
Preserved until when?
Until 4 centuries from now. Until the Doomsday Battle.
And you think that's possible?
Yes, if it continues to develop. Let its soul and spirit permeate the Space Force, so that your organization will be part of it forever.
And you value that so highly because...
The sarcasm in the old man's voice grew stronger. Because it's one of the few armed forces available to humanity that uses lives as a weapon. You know, fundamental science has been frozen by the Sophons, and this imposes corresponding limitations on advances in computer science and artificial intelligence. In the Doomsday Battle, space fighters will still be piloted by humans, and that requires an army who possesses that spirit. Ball lightning requires a close-range attack, something that can only be accomplished by an army who possesses that spirit.
What else have you brought with you besides those books?
Tyler stood up excitedly from the bed. That depends on what you need. So long as you can ensure the preservation of your organization, I can give you anything. The old man motioned for Tyler to sit down.
I sympathize with you. After so many years, you still don't know what our needs truly are.
You can tell me.
Weapons? Money? No.
No.
What we need is far more precious. The organization doesn't exist because of Seldon's ambitious goals. You can't get a sane, rational person to believe in and die for that. It exists because it possesses something. Something that's its air and blood. And without which, the organization would wither away immediately.
What's that?
Hatred.
Tyler was silent.
On the one hand, thanks to our common enemy, our hatred of the West has faded. On the other, the human race that the Trisolarans want to wipe out includes the hated West. So to us, perishing together would be a joy. So we don't hate the Trisolarans.
The old man spread his hands.
You see, hatred is a treasure more precious than gold or diamonds, and a weapon keener than any in the world. But now it's gone. It's not yours to give back. So the organization, like me, does not have long to live.
Tyler remained silent.
As for Seldon, I'd say his plan is an impossible one.
Tyler let out a sigh and sat back down on the bed.
You mean you've read the ending?
The old man raised an eyebrow in surprise.
No, I haven't read it. That's just what I think. What? Does the Seldon plan fail in the book? The author is an exceptional man, if that's the case. I'd imagined he wrote a happy ending. May Allah protect him.
Asimov's been dead for many years.
Ah, the wise always die young. May he find heaven, whichever one it is.
For most of the way back, Tyler was not blindfolded, giving him the opportunity to see the steep, barren mountains of Afghanistan. The young man who led his mule even trusted him enough to leave his assault rifle hanging from the saddle, right next to Tyler's hand.
"Have you killed anyone with that gun?"
he asked. The young man didn't understand, but an older, unarmed man riding next to them answered for him.
"No, there hasn't been any fighting for a long time."
The young man looked up questioningly at Tyler. He had no beard on his childlike face, and his eyes were as clear as the blue sky of Western Asia. "Mom, I'm going to be a firefly."
At the fourth PDC Wallfacer hearing, Tyler appeared fatigued from his long journey as he submitted revisions to his Mosquito Swarm plan. I want every fighter in the Mosquito fleet to be equipped with two control systems, a pilot-operated mode and a drone mode. Switching to drone mode will allow me to control all of the fighters in the fleet.
You're very hands-on, Hines snickered.
I'll be able to instruct the fleet to form a Mosquito group and voyage to the battle zone, then tell it to disassemble and re-enter formation. When it engages the enemy fleet, I will command the weapons module on each fighter to select its own target and attack automatically. I'd imagine that even with the lockdown on the fundamentals of physics, current AI technology will develop enough in the next 3 centuries to permit that.
Do you mean that you plan to hibernate until the Doomsday Battle, and then directly engage the Tri-Solaran fleet?
Do I have a choice? You know I've just been to Japan, China, and Afghanistan, and didn't find what I'm looking for there.
And you visited that devil? The U.S. representative said.
That's right. I saw him. But, Tyler gave a long, dejected sigh. Nothing. I'll keep trying to establish a force of dedicated space fighters, but if I can't, then I'll have to guide them into the final attack myself. No one spoke. Where the Doomsday Battle was concerned, people usually chose to be silent. Tyler continued. I have another supplement to the Mosquito Swarm plan. I want to conduct my own studies of certain bodies in the solar system in areas of my choosing. These bodies include Europa, Ceres, and several comets.
How is this related to the space fighter fleet?
Someone asked. Do I need to answer that? Tyler asked, looking at the rotating chair. No one spoke. Of course, he didn't have to answer. Finally, I have a recommendation. The PDC and every nation on Earth should scale back their attacks on the ETO. Ray Diaz jumped out of his chair.
Mr. Tyler, even if you claim that this is part of the plan, I strongly oppose this outrageous proposal.
Tyler shook his head. This is not part of the plan. It's totally unconnected to the Wallfacer project. The reason for my suggestion is obvious. If we persist in our attacks on the ETO, in 2 or 3 years, we may wipe it out, and we will lose the only direct channel for communication between Earth and Tri-Solaris. We'll have lost the most important source of enemy intelligence. I'm sure you understand what the consequences would be.
Hines said, I agree, but this proposal shouldn't be made by a Wallfacer. The three of us are a unit in the minds of the public, so please keep our reputation in mind.
The hearing ended in unresolved arguments, but an agreement was reached for the PDC to conduct further study of the 3 revisions to Tyler's plan and put them to a vote at the next hearing. Tyler remained seated until he was the last one in the assembly hall. He was exhausted and drowsy after his lengthy travels, and as he looked around the empty room, he suddenly realized a risk he had overlooked. He needed to find a doctor or a psychologist, and a specialist in sleep medicine. He had to find someone to stop him from talking in his sleep. Luoji and Zhuang Yan walked toward the main entrance of the Louvre at 10 p.m. Kent had advised them to visit at night to facilitate more convenient security. The first thing they saw was the glass pyramid, shielded from the nighttime din of Paris by the U-shaped palace building, and standing quietly under the watery moonlight as if it were made of silver.
Mr. Luo, don't you get the feeling that it flew in from outer space?
Zhuang Yan asked, pointing to the pyramid.
Everyone has that feeling, Luoji said.
At first it feels a little out of place, but the more you look at it, the more it seems to be an integral part of the place.
the meeting of two vastly different worlds, Luoji thought, but did not say. Then the whole pyramid lit up, turning from moonlit silver to a brilliant gold. At the same time, the fountains came on in the surrounding pools, sending tall columns of water and light skyward. Zhuang Yan glanced at Luoji in alarm, unsettled by the Louvre's awakening at their arrival. Accompanied by water sounds, they made their way down the pyramid into the Hall Napoleon, and then into the palace. Their first destination was the largest exhibition hall. It was 200 meters long and softly lit, and their footsteps echoed down the emptiness. Luoji quickly realized that it was only his footsteps echoing, for Zhuang Yan walked lightly on cat-like steps, like a child in a fairy tale who enters a magic castle and is afraid of waking what slumbers there. He slowed his pace, not for the artwork, which didn't interest him at all, but to let the distance between them grow and allow him to appreciate her among this world of art, gazing upon the beauty of this Eastern woman, along with the full-figured Greek gods, angels, and the Blessed Virgin in the surrounding classical oil paintings. Like the glass pyramid in the courtyard, she soon blended into the environment and became part of the sacred realm of art. Without her, this place would be missing something. In a reverie, or a dream, or a vision, he let time pass by quietly. After a time, Zhuang Yan finally remembered Luoji's presence and flashed a smile back at him. His heart quaked at what felt to him like a bolt of light sent to the mortal realm from a painting of Mount Olympus. "I've heard that with a trained eye, it would take you a whole year to see all of the pieces here," he said.
"I know,"
was her simple reply, but her eyes said, "What should I do?" Then she turned her attention to the paintings. In all this time, she had seen only 5 of them.
"It doesn't matter, Yan Yan. I can look at them with you every night for a year."
The words slipped out. She turned to look at him, visibly excited.
"Really?"
"Really."
"Well, Mr. Luo, have you ever been here before?"
"No, but I went to the Centre Pompidou when I came to Paris 3 years ago. At first, I thought you would be more interested in going there." She shook her head.
"I don't like modern art."
"Then all this?" He glanced around at the gods, angels, and Blessed Virgin. "You don't think it's too old?"
"I don't like it too old. I just like paintings of the Renaissance."
"Those are pretty old, too."
"But they don't feel old to me. Those painters were the first to discover human beauty, and they painted God as a pleasing person. Looking at these works, you can sense their joy in painting, the same joy I felt when I first saw the lake and the snow peak."
"That's good. But the humanistic spirit pioneered by the Renaissance masters has become a stumbling block."
"You mean in the trisolar crisis?"
"Yes. You must have seen what's been happening lately. 4 centuries from now, the post-disaster world might return to the Middle Ages, with humanity once again subjected to extreme repression."
"And art will enter a long winter's night, right?"
Looking at her innocent eyes, he smiled wryly to himself. "Silly kid. You talk about art, but if humanity does manage to survive, regressing to a primitive society would be a small price to pay." But he said, "When that time comes, there may be a second Renaissance, and you could rediscover forgotten beauty and paint it." She smiled a smile tinged with sadness, clearly understanding the meaning behind Luoji's consoling words.
"I'm just thinking, after Doomsday, what will happen to these paintings and artworks?"
"You're worried about that?" he asked. When she mentioned Doomsday, his heart ached. But if his last attempt at comfort had failed, he was confident that he would succeed this time. so he took her hand and said, "Come on, let's go to the Asian art exhibit." Before the pyramid lobby was built, the Louvre was a giant maze. Getting to any particular gallery meant a long and winding detour. But now you could go directly from the Hall Napoleon beneath the pyramid to any point in the museum. Luoji and Zhuang Yan returned to the entrance hall, followed the signs leading to the Arts